welcome to another Radio Fishing, and the special edition of Radio Fishing is Radio PGI, you know, kind of like Radio Punta Gorda Isles Fishing Club. And we have a cast with us today. Yes, I'm Fishing Frank. I'm going to be mediating this endeavor here. I'm going to let everybody kind of introduce themselves, and we have the president of the PGI Fishing Club here, Vinny. And Vinny, you want to introduce everybody? And
yeah. How you doing, Frank?
I'm doing well.
So, I'm the president of the Fishing Club, and with me today I have Joe Adwari, who is one of our top anglers in the club, former fishing events director in the club, and also with him is Jim Hoffman, who I regard as the club oracle when it comes to pretty much any kind of fishing, specifically offshore into the Gulf.
That was really serious. I'm sitting here going, oh yeah, okay. Well, we have an oracle, and then the wizard.
And a has-been.
We have the knight of the realm. Okay. Anyway, so the one thing about the PGI Fishing Club, you do have to live in Punta Gorda Isles to be a member.
That's right.
But anybody who belongs to the Punta Gorda Isles Civic Association?
Right. If you live in PGI, if you're a member of the Punta Gorda Isles Civic Association, you can join the fishing club. And, you know, tell you a little bit about our club. We've got roughly 550 active members within the club.
And about 120 that really don't get around well.
Well, we don't want to talk about Joe.
Sorry, Freddy, I couldn't help it.
But we really do have a really slick club. We meet once a month, the second Tuesday of every month at the Civic Association. And we've got a lot of different events throughout the year, tournaments and training seminars, especially for new members that have come down here. And like you've seen in the store many a time, someone new to the area walks in and they look like a deer in the headlights, you know, trying to figure out this harbor.
Yeah, that's the best and the worst thing about Charlotte Harbor is it's massive. I mean, hundreds of miles. If you count islands, shorelines, and creeks and everything else, there's just miles and miles of shoreline to fish. And then you get the middle of the harbor, and then the Gulf is right here. And then there's also going up the rivers and freshwater and ponds. And, you know, this area's got it all, but it does make it a little intimidating when you get here. So you do get a lot of new members. Now, at the club meetings, you have speakers each month.
Right. Yeah, every month we try to get, you know, an experienced guide. You know, we bring you at least
once
a year.
You've asked me to talk there. I'm not sure what the correlation was on that.
You do so much for our club, we felt sorry. And we
thought, no, I'll take the pity vote. You know, I'm all in on the pity stuff. Why don't you introduce your guest here? I'm not sorry, you did introduce your guest. Why don't you, we came here today for a reason.
Yeah.
What the purpose of this is to introduce the club.
Yeah, and you know what I'd like to accomplish from these broadcasts is to better communicate out to the club members, you know, things that are going on within the club, activities that are going on, and specifically today we're going to talk about next month's fish of the month, which is grouper. So I wanted to bring two people with me that are pretty experienced at catching the grouper offshore and be able to talk some tips and pointers on how to do it.
If you're a newbie in the PGF Fishing Club, each month they have a fish of the month, and then when you catch the fish, you bring in your pictures of them, and you don't actually bring the fish back to the club meeting. You bring the pictures in, and then you have winners and losers and everything, just like real life. So why don't you guys, the next month, and one of the problems with fish of the month is it actually starts before the meeting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Grouper is actually going to be in for, you know, as the fish of the month for more than a week before your first meeting of the club.
That's right.
So why don't you talk about the grouper and what you're going to do with it?
Well, let me, I guess I could turn it over. Jim, you want to start out with a few pointers on it?
I'm not a radio star, but I'll give it a shot.
You aren't?
No.
Then why the hell are you here?
But I was, well,
he
came,
told me you were a radio star.
No, I came.
Taking this as just false advertisement. I was assuming you were a professional.
I came to sing and do my demo.
Oh, okay.
not to talk about fish. You know.
It was. Yeah, I saw you MTV Awards. That's
there you
right.
Go. Yeah. But I'll start out from where what we do when I go out fishing for a grouper. I go out Gasparilla Pass. Or Boca Grande Pass, I'm sorry, and I go to the first double set of buoys, and if you look at your bottom chart, about 100 feet inside the red buoy towards shore, you'll see a circle, and that's where we stop for bait fish. We catch squirrel fish mainly there, and if we're successful catching squirrel fish there, and I want blue runners or pinfish, I'll go out to the last two sea buoys and try along the chains, and then I'll proceed to the bell buoy, the sea buoy, and fish along their chain and 20 yards around it.
And I'm feeling like I'm in an NSA briefing here. This is very specific.
Yeah.
Okay. Now,
well, believe it or not, I had a gentleman call me when I was in therapy the other day. And he was setting off of the pass, not catching any fish, no bait fish. He's a member of the club. Was out with another person from Ponte Gorda that hadn't joined the club. And called me and asked me where he could catch some bait fish. And I told him just what I just said on a few minutes ago. And he proceeded to catch the bait fish and go out and fish for grouper.
Now, how far out do you usually travel for grouper?
We found this last year that we could catch them at 65 feet keepers.
Later, how many later miles in out? The year. How many miles out is that?
That's 10 to 12. And then we go out to 85, and then we go out to 100, about 32 miles, and then we go out to 123, 124, which is 40 some miles.
All right. Now I have a question. Do you agree with what he's saying? I mean, is this...
I wouldn't disagree because he taught me everything I know. But, no, I think there's a couple of different approaches. And I just want to remind everybody that just because grouper is a month-long event, you cannot go grouper fishing every day of the month. You first need to check the weather. You check the tides. You check the solunar. There's a couple of things that you should do, really, to increase the chance of you doing well. But as far as the details of where to catch bait, and where we fish, yeah. We generally, get right, together with a couple of different people.
Let's take a backstop, or back up for just a second. We're talking about catching bait. How, when you go down for squirrel fish, what do you use for, to catch a squirrel fish? You're using a big 4-aught? Sabiki rig. Okay, now that's off a regular spinning rod?
Yeah, yep. light spinning rods. I prefer the light spinning rods. Sorry about the sales for these sabiki rods, but I don't like them because they're too stiff.
Okay.
You know, I like to use like a little smallmouth bass, freshwater rod and reel combo.
All right. Now, what size weight are you using on your sabiki? Because you have about 6 hooks on a sabiki, then a lead weight at the bottom.
Yeah, first thing I do is I cut the sabiki in half, use about 3 hooks because you get a blue runner on, it tangles them all up, and you have to throw it away. Depending on the current going out the pass, probably 3 to 4 ounces if you're fishing off the bottom for squirrel fish or
okay, so you're using
fish.
A pretty heavy rod.
No.
With 3 to 4 ounces of lead.
Not at all.
No? Okay. Now, what about you?
I fish for squirrel fish, I use, I stopped using a sabiki. I just use the two, like a perch rig.
Okay.
With the smaller hooks, and I move the one so it hangs on the bottom, you know, below the weight. Because I find the squirrel fish are right on the bottom, and I use a 3-ounce lead, and I drop it down to the bottom, and usually I catch the squirrel fish on the bottom hooks.
Now, are you tipping them with shrimp or squid?
Yes.
Typically, squid wings. They stay on better.
Yeah, squid wings are great bait.
Yeah.
And when we go out to the sea buoys, then I go back to the sabiki rods, where you wind the sabiki up inside the rod.
Yeah, the Fish and Frank's sabiki rod, the best one in the world.
That's
There's
right.
nothing else
you
like it.
You sold them
yes.
to me when they first came out. You sold them to me. And it
no, your opinion is duly noted, and I've been properly chastised over that. But for those of us who do use them.
Yeah. We use those alongside the buoys.
Mm-hmm. I get hooked a lot more on those sabiki hooks than you do with your rod.
Yeah. As you walk by, you know, it. Not using it, but as you walk by it, that's what the problem with
but
it is.
But it's important to note that there's different bait fish that you can target. And if they're suspended bait schools, it's easier to use, you know, a six-hook sabiki rig with like a 1 ounce or a half ounce because you're fishing in the water column. And you need to downsize your hooks a little bit. Get cigar minnows, get thread fins, get, you know, sardines. So
I'm using like number 8, number 10 hooks on some of those.
Yeah.
You know,
I use number 6s for the bottom.
Yeah, 6s and 4s are nice if you're doing squirrel fish and blue runners and stuff like that.
A lot easier to get the hook back out.
Yeah, I actually just kind of judge it by what I'm trying to target there. Now, Vinny, you go off. Now, are you in with this bait thing? How do you get your bait out there?
Pretty much the same way, and learned from these guys.
So you're a sabiki rod or non-sabiki rod guy?
I use both. I recently got one of the Fish and Frank sabiki rods, and I kind of like it. I mean, it's working fine for me.
It's I try to make the action a little bit lighter than the other ones we were selling because that was like trying to catch bait with a broomstick.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
My experience, though, is I don't think I've ever had a sabiki rig last a day. So, you know, normally when I'm done catching bait, that rig is getting thrown away.
Yeah.
And, you know, the important thing, too, is let's not forget the frozen bait that you need to bring along just in case. They don't like live bait that particular day. So load up on some squid, load up on some, you know, ladyfish. If you've caught some in the harbor and you've frozen them, take those along. Cut bait is great. Live bait is great. Try all combinations. Sometimes a jig head with tip with plastic.
I don't ever leave the dock without having some frozen bait with
Correct.
Me anymore. I just call it homage to Poseidon because he will punish you for arrogance. You know, oh, I just go out and catch all the bait I want, no big deal. And you will go out, find no bait, find no fish.
Yeah.
Poseidon does not like arrogance.
Yeah. Or the last time, you know, they were only biting on squirrel fish, and this time they're not taking squirrel fish, they're taking pinfish or pigfish or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, whenever we go out, I have a whole cooler with sardines, squid, octopus, Google eyes, and chum, blocks of chum. Just in case I find a pile of fish that I want to anchor over, I'll drop a box of chum down off the bow to the bottom and one off the stern. And while I'm fishing for the grouper or the snapper on the bottom, then I'll put out the flat lines behind the boat. So I'm fishing the whole water column for anything that may swim by.
Okay, let's take a look at that because it's kind of interesting at that point. Now, let's pretend we're out and we've hit a hard. You guys like hard bottom or you like structure?
Hard bottom. But, you know, if you can find structure, that's great.
Okay, so.
We've got some reefs out there, you know.
Let's just talk hard bottom for a minute. And now, hard bottom isn't what people think it is. Hard bottom is actually a very. If you were to stand on one end of it and look across, it would look like a big rock, like a flat lava flow of rock. But when you look at it from above, it's all cracks and crevices in it. And this, the cracks in this could go down 10, 15, 20 feet or 2 feet or a foot. And the fish tend to hide in and amongst those cracks. So once you find this bottom, you're not actually fishing a flat, hard bottom. You're fishing a very jagged edge. If you pictured mesas in Arizona, the big rock formations all very tightly packed together. Now, we're anchoring. You're going to... Let's start with you, Vinny. If you get there, you're going to drift or anchor?
I'd say 90% of the time I drift.
Okay, now?
90% of the time I drift. The only time I anchor is when I find a pile of fish.
Okay, hang on. Now, drift or anchor?
I usually drift because I'm usually out there in my skeeter, and I don't like to anchor with that because I can't get my anchor back up.
All right, so now we've got three guys that are all basically drifting. First choice, drifting when you find hard bottom. And the reason being is, as you said, looking for fish, right?
Yes.
Because you don't exactly know, because with hard bottom, they could be hiding right below
Can't
the surface.
See them.
And
Can't see them.
There could be 1,000 fish there, but they won't show on a depth finder. But all of a sudden, you drag a bait across. Now, when you're drifting, how do you rig up? Let's go over everybody's name again so I get everything right. I have radiation treatments in my brain. I'm diabetic. I'm really old, so nothing sticks. Go ahead, Tim.
Joe would worry.
Jim Hoffman.
Okay, now Joe, when you drift, what size weight are you using? What type of rig?
Again, it really depends on the conditions, the day, the wind, the current.
Let's say mild current.
If it's
mild wind.
Mild wind, mild current, I'll probably start out with a 6 ounce. I use an Abbott, you know, 550, 5-aught, something like that, reel, conventional okay. reel. I use 80-pound Power Pro. I use a swivel to hook to a interchangeable lead weight. I'll usually start out with a 6, and Jim taught me that. And then I'll use about a 4 or 5 foot long 60 to 80-pound leader. I like a long leash on my live bait. I'll use a 7 or 8-aught inline circle hook and drop it down.
Okay.
And if I can't hold bottom, then I go to heavier weight.
Now, Jim.
Anybody you talk to at the club will tell you I got rules on my boat. And the rules are that when we go out, we all use the same size.
Everybody laughing.
Because they know.
We've all been on his boat.
I believe this is Agent Gibbs here.
Yeah.
These are the rules.
I've been keel-hauled.
You've been keel-hauled. Okay.
We all go out and we use the same size sinkers, and we basically use the same size leaders, which is usually 18-inch, and we use the same, we don't use any blue runners unless we cut the tails because they run and tangle everybody.
Gotcha.
And when you're fishing with 5 guys on a boat, this eliminates a lot of tangles and a lot of headaches and you catch more fish. And what I do is, I generally, like Joe said, start out with a 6th, go to an 8, go to a 10, go to a 12, whatever is required to hold the bottom more or less straight up or down. You don't want that thing going way out. And then I got my hook below that, an 18-inch leader, and I use red.
All right, now here's a discrepancy. You've got an 18-inch leader. He's using 4 to 5 feet.
He fishes by himself a lot.
Yeah,
you know, if you put a 4 or 5 foot leader on a boat with 5 guys, you got problems.
When I fish with Jim, I do what he tells me to do.
Okay, so you're actually, I'm more in line with you. I'm using 18 to 30 inch leader. I very seldom ever progress past that.
And that prevents the fish from coming up and tangling around a line as you're letting the lead weight down, unless you let it down extremely slow. And then on the bottom of that, I use a Daiichi 7-aught circle hook, a circle-like chunk hook. And they're red in color, and they're great hooks. They got a wide mouth, and they go right around the grouper's jaw. And you ordered me 10 packs of these a while back.
No, the Daiichi is a nice hook. Probably I like it for a reason different than you. If you scratch the red on it, the material underneath is made to corrode very, very quickly once the red is scratched. And people don't realize that. The Daiichi hooks were specially formulated so that if you nick the red finish, like setting the hook on a fish, the interior will start to decay quickly. It's a and it's a very low toxin level. A lot of hooks, people, when they think leaving the hook in the fish, you don't realize how much blood poisoning toxicity comes in from the deterioration of the hooks. Daiichi was specially formulated to avoid that and to corrode much, much faster than a normal hook once the red coating was nicked. It was actually a very cool innovation. I know the guys who own that company, by the way.
No, it's a good hook. I've caught 10-foot sharks on it, an amberjack, and a large grouper.
Oh, without a doubt.
I've only had one ever break on me.
I was just letting you know it's probably even better than you think. It was really a lot of thought went into the Daiichi hooks. They're a little on the expensive side, but there was a lot of thought, a lot of engineering, and every material in there was exacting to benefit the fish as much as possible.
Yeah. And then when I'm hooking the squirrel fish, I hook them a little different than a lot of the guys. They want to hook them through the nose, and I hook them through the top of the back. And my theory on that is when that grouper, they eat their lunch head first, and his jaw slides over that squirrel fish's back, and he's trying to munch it in, that he catches that hook right away.
Never thought about it that way.
In the nose, when you hook him in the nose, he gets that, and that hook is stuck in the nose and not up in the jaw on the top of the back. When it's in the back, as soon as his jaw comes across that, he catches that hook.
He's actually setting the hook on himself, but
That's correct.
It's in the nose of the fish, it's already going down his throat.
That's correct.
Good thought. You know, I can tell you, never thought of that one myself. I learned something new today. Good idea.
Oracle.
Yes, the Oracle. Now, I'm sorry, I just had this vision at the club of this little back room where the doors open up and there's a statue and incense burning.
That's the offshore door.
Okay. Now, Vinny, what's your thought on this? What leaders are you using?
I'm pretty much in line with what Joe and Jim have said. I don't use the Daiichi. I use, normally I'll have an owner inline circle, 7-aught, or a VMC inline circle.
Yeah.
But pretty much rigged the same way, about 18-inch leader. I'll normally start at about 50 pounds, sometimes go more on the leader. And I like to use monofilament. When I drop down versus braid, purely because visibility.
Yeah, braid is very visible. I mean, it doesn't matter if you tie a swivel to the end of it or what you do; it's visible line. Yeah.
Now, the negative is when you're doing that, when you're setting the hook and you really got a good tug of war going. If you're 80 feet down with monofilament, you get so much stress, you may not get a good hook set.
Yeah, the stretch is hard to deal with.
Yeah.
That's where a longer rod, if you're using mono, comes in handy, because you're getting that big long up sweep. It kind of puts a leverage in the fish's favor, but it helps you actually get that hook up. When I'm doing braid, it's all short rods. I don't have to worry about it.
Let me just interject here. I tend to agree with you guys for other species, but for grouper, I don't think it matters. You can put anything in front of them and they'll eat it. They're not afraid of braid. I think if you're fishing for snapper and stuff like that, what you're saying makes a lot of sense. But really, I've caught so many grouper using the rigs that I've described, 80-pound braid. They're not afraid of it.
Well, you know what I use for snapper is fluorocarbon.
Yeah. And you can feel when they breathe on that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know exactly when they're there.
Now, especially I use the fluorocarbon on the leaders all the time.
Right.
But I use the braid for all my poles out there.
Well, less wind resistance, let's call it, with braid, because it's so thin. And so the current comes across. It's like if you hung a line outside in the wind and the wind starts blowing, it will blow that line into an arc or actually bring it straight out, depending upon the wind. So the thinner the line, the less resistance you have from the current, allows you to use a little less lead, or even using more lead but get more feel from it.
It gives you better feel because you're straight up and down. You know,
you don't have the bow and the line from the current. Okay. Now, bait choices, everybody's kind of saying kind of a mixed thing, and I think it kind of goes along with what we do. I go up to Luigi's once a month. We have our fishing club meetings up there. And I like Italian food, but I also like Oriental food and German food and all the rest of this stuff. And sometimes I think you get cravings for stuff. Ever open the refrigerator looking for something, you can't figure out what it is, but you know you need something? And I think fish are a lot like that. Is that what you guys are trying to say with?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, we were talking about that the other day. Well, at the dinner last night, we go out on Wednesday night to the Tiki Hut, as the fishing club meets there, and then goes to dinner. And we were talking about, one of the old guys told me, go out to 56 feet and catch squirrel fish and grunts. And I generally haven't had much luck with grunts, but another fellow that fishes with me, he went out and caught a whole lot of grunts and not much else, and he went out and killed the grouper that day on grunts. Now, when I go out, a lot of times we'll catch lizard fish, grunts, croakers, squirrel fish, blue runners. And my preference is squirrel fish, lizard fish, blue runner, grunt, and croaker in that order. And if that don't work, then I try sardines, squid, octopus, until we find the combination that works. We've got some friends that we fish with that go out there and they'll put squirrel fish. They'll put a dead sardine, they'll put a dead squid, they'll put a dead octopus, and a piece of ladyfish to hold them on, and drop that down. They actually need to put another hook on there to catch the fish.
Yeah,
when it comes around.
You have to have some hook left after you put the bait on.
But when you're out there and you travel 2 hours and 50 miles out, you have to try everything at your disposal. That's why you take it all with you, so you can have the best results possible for that day.
Maybe this is a good place to interject something that, if you're fishing in state water and you're bottom fishing like at the buoys or something, you catch an 8-inch lane snapper that happens to be legal, you could use it in state water for bait, but you can't do that in federal water 9 miles offshore. So Just a reminder to those novices that are starting out. That
I try to remind people, if it has a size limit, don't use it for bait.
Yeah.
That's if you use that as just a general rule of thumb,
you stay out of trouble.
Right. But if it doesn't have a size limit on it, you're probably fine with bait. But if it's got a size limit, everything gets iffy. That's a dicey situation.
Right.
Now, one of the things that I do when I'm offshore, maybe you guys will agree or disagree, if I got four anglers, a lot of times I start out with four different baits.
Yeah.
On each rod.
We give everybody their choice, you know.
Yeah, I want to try and find out what the fish are interested in, and then we start getting hits on one type of bait, we just switch the other ones over to it.
I fish with some guys that'll start out religiously with cut bait because it's stinkier, they want to draw in the fish, and they do really well. I won't mention names.
Okay.
I think that's a good approach, and that same approach works when you're fishing in the harbor, you know, for different kind of fish too. If you're throwing lures, don't start out with everyone throwing the same lure. You know, kind of have it mixed up. So
yeah, because you never know. I mean,
it's like bass fishing. You're looking for a pattern.
Right.
Know?
Okay. So now, one of the things I'm gonna give you newbie club members a good idea of where to go. Go out through Boca Grande Pass, go out through the markers, and at the end of the markers, look at your compass, not your GPS, again, on a 272-degree course heading, and go about 7 miles. Watch the bottom. You're going to see the bottom line is very smooth, a lot of sand between you and where you're going. And then once your bottom line on your machine starts looking jagged, that's when you start getting on the rock field, because the sensor is going from the hard top of the rock down into the crack, back to the hard top, down a crack, back to the hard top, and it creates a jagged looking bottom line. So a 272 compass heading off Boca Grande Pass, about 7 miles. It's a huge, huge flat bottom rock field out there. I've been fishing there for decades, and it always produces pretty good, and I don't mind sharing a little bit. I'm not going to ask these guys to share where they go. I know better than that. But it's a place, on a nice, calm day, when there's light and variable winds, I'll run out there in my flats boat, and I can go out there, catch some fish, and spin back in. But it's rewind and replay, and listen to some of the techniques they were talking about. That's what you're going to have to know. It's those little things about this that are going to make you successful or not successful.
Let me make a comment about them, where you're talking about out there. There are actually three reef lines that run through there, I believe. And then when they're catching the crabs, you'll see the crab pots, you'll see three different lines running out there. And that's where I used to catch my bait fish, but I was getting too many grunts and too many croaker and
see, I target grunts for food fish.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Delicious. We only looking for bait.
Well, like, to me, I would say one of the best eating fish in the Gulf of Mexico is the grunts.
And but you can drift any of those three reefs out there and catch bait fish or grunts or snapper to take home for dinner. You know, if you're not going any farther out. But it's a good place to catch the bait fish and the smaller fish that you want to eat.
Yeah, another comment, by the way, since grouper month starts with when red grouper are off limits beyond 20 fathoms, 120 feet, that's February 1st through the end of March. Don't fish for red grouper beyond that. And it's not really 120 feet, it's an artificial delineation that exists, but you can find it on Gulf Council of Mexico, you know, Gulf of Mexico, and they regulate the rules for the federal, for NOAA, and just make sure you know where you're at. So if you're happening, you know, you're not catching fish at 80, 90, 100, and you think, well, I'm just going to go out to 130 on average, you're out of bounds.
Well, I would say with the water as cold as it is, the red grouper should be right up in Trembly, Novak, Mary's, the Power Pole. It's so cold.
Yeah,
then
you're
cold,
in state, right.
I would start with the near reefs right now. I would not be traveling distance on my first run. I would go out, hit some of the near reefs. Now, if you come up to one of these, let's say you're going out to the Power Poles, and how do you look for fish around a reef like that? Let's just say the Power Pole Reef. If you were going to go there, what would you do when you get there? Let's start with Vinny, and we'll go to this way.
Normally, again, if I'm looking for grouper, I'm still looking for a good bottom see.
So we're at the reef, at the power pole reefs. What are you going to look for? How, when you get there, what are you going to do?
I'm looking for patches of fish or patches of bottom change. I'm not really looking to go right over on top of the power pole and fish for grouper.
So you're scanning the horizon?
I'm fishing around it. I'm working around it.
No, you're not getting. I'm being facetious. Scanning the horizon. Mm-hmm. You're checking your depth finder.
Yeah.
You're really watching your bottom machine. Because remember, now we're talking for newbies here, people who really don't understand anything. So I'm trying to get you guys to be pretty specific. When you're dealing with newbies, really, you got to tell them watch the bottom machine. It's something that we all take for granted, but you're really looking close at your bottom machine. I know you've got some great equipment. You're looking down at the machine, watching it. Now, do you guys, what do you guys do? What are you looking for on that bottom machine? Anybody?
If I'm around them reefs, I'm looking for piles of fish. I'm not necessarily looking for hard bottom anymore because, you got all the reef structures, the different piles of garbage that they've junked out there. And if I find a pile of fish, and I'll fish the outside of that pile of fish, because if there's grouper around there, they're going to be hanging on the outside. They're not going to be right in with that pile of fish. They're going to be laying on the outside waiting for a straggler to come by and have lunch. But that's what I do when I go around them. But, usually I troll around them.
One thing I'm big on is buoys, marker jugs.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've got three of them on the boat. I've got the yellow markers, and if we catch three fish, hook three grouper at one time, I mark it on my bottom machine, and I throw out the marker if I feel it's worth it, But that's only if I catch two or three right simultaneously, or if I find a pile of fish that I want to go back there and continue drifting the same line.
Now, I don't know about you, but I feel it's very hard to find a spot again with the GPS. Not getting to the spot, but if I just caught three fish, without a marker jug,
it is.
It's almost impossible to get back there.
It is. It's
the bigger
absolutely
the boat,
impossible.
The harder it is.
So we get a visual reference point. Once you toss that buoy overboard, 2-3 pounds of lead, a laundry detergent jug with some line tied to it.
Yep. I got a red snapper spot out there that I was running along one day going from one spot to another 120 some feet out, and seen a ledge as we were going past. Okay, I turned around immediately. I came back going the other direction. I couldn't find the ledge. I had to go up another couple hundred yards and come back on the same track that I was on, absolutely the same track, and then I could find it. Any other direction out there, you wouldn't see that ledge on my machine. And that ledge was a live reef down there, and that's where we catch the red snapper. There's live coral and that you'll hook every once in a while.
Now, just to give people an idea, how long from when you saw it to when you found it again?
Well, it took a good half hour to rediscover it.
I would say an easy half hour, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One of the things when we talk about it, we make it sound like, oh, I drove over there and I had to turn around and go back and I found it. But they don't realize how much time and effort it goes into rediscovering something you found.
Yeah, and then you get on the spot on the mark when you marked it real quick. I mean, you're already 300 feet off of it by the time your finger reaches up and hits that marker if you're traveling at 30 miles an hour, so you go back and then you put the boat on that spot and then you start circling and you just keep enlarging your circle and you hope you can find it on the direction that you're traveling when you're doing that circle. Sometimes you can't.
I do like your idea of just going back a mile or so or half a mile and then following, getting on, zoom the GPS in so you're right on your exact same course and coming back over that line at a slow speed.
That's one of the other things that I've found over the years, that when you mark these spots, I zoom my bottom machine into the 1 foot, the 1 foot margin on it,
yeah.
As close as I can get, because when you do it at 6 miles or 12 miles of that, you're way off. You want to mark them at your lowest settings on your bottom machine.
Really hard to follow it, but that's where the buoys come in. Once I'm coming back, I'm watching that bottom machine trying to find it. As soon as I see it, I'll yell throw and have somebody in the back of the boat throwing a buoy overboard.
That's what we do also.
This is my standard procedure. When I get to the power poles, I'm going to the numbers and then I do the circle, but I'm sitting watching the machine. I have somebody in the back and I yell throw, and they throw it as far back beyond the boat as they can. Right. Because it's not instant from when that the sound hits it, comes back up, it's got to go through the transducer, into the electronics, and then print on the screen.
Right.
So even when you're going very slow, try and throw that buoy back as far as possible.
You're correct.
So, hey, I got one right. I'm good with that. I can handle it. I've got one right here today. So I've learned something new. I got one right. Now, grouper is going to be the fish of the month for February.
Yep.
And what does Fish of the Month involve at the club? I mean, is it a pat on the back and, you know, attaboy, you caught a grouper?
It's one of your gift certificates, and the biggest three groupers get rewarded with gift certificates and the honor of having the biggest fish of the month.
And the privilege of coming into Frank's to buy.
Yeah, we usually we have the top three fish in terms of length for both male and female anglers that get awarded certificates.
Has a guy ever beat a woman doing this?
Never.
I mean, just curious. Has a guy ever been able to beat the females? People say that, well, you know, you got women anglers are separate. No, that's just to give us a chance to win something.
And, you know, speaking for myself, it's amazing how much money people will spend to try and get win a $35 certificate.
Now, it doesn't pay off.
But it's fun.
I can tell you, one of the tournaments I worked the hardest at, I think for a week and a half, I was getting an hour to 3 hours sleep a night, and the entire prize for it was a little tiny gold snook pin that was worth $4.95.
Yep, been there, done that.
I went out last year with Josh Oliver and Porter on the fishing tournament for, I believe, Lemon Bay High School.
Right.
And I thought I was going to win big money. Well, you know, by the time it was all said and done, it cost me $400. So the tournament, we came in second in the tournament, you know.
And I'm going to kind of retrack. And now this Fish of the Month goes towards other accolades at the you get to have an angler thing and we have levels of angler, right?
We have the master anglers where you have to catch 23 species and get 2,000 points, and you get 100, 200, or 300 points depending on what the size is of the fish you catch. And when you get that, you get a club shirt. But on the way up, we have 6 or 7 or 8. Joe knows more. He was the director, so I'll let him continue.
Yeah, we have a ladder of achievement program where you start out, every member that joins is an angler, and then you work your way up. Your first fish that you catch, doesn't matter what it is, you get a hat. Then, you know, you catch more fish and legal fish as defined by the club that are eligible for this ladder of achievement. And you work your way up through about 9 different steps to get your shirt. So you get rewarded for continuing to fish and continuing to do well. And then after you get your shirt, for those people who've had the shirt for a long time, we've instituted something that's called a GMA star. So when you catch 2,000 points of fish in a year, you get a little gold star. And, you know, we keep things interesting.
I got to say, it is an amazing club. I have been going to give talks since the mid-80s in PGI Fishing Club. So I've been following the club for many years, decades. Jeez, decades. Oh, all right. Anyway, good club. Yeah, I just had this moment of, oh, my God, what happened to you? that would happen to me, you know. Let's see. As we go through this, now, Vinny, you've been down here how many years now?
Just over 3 years.
Just over 3 years and
13 years.
13 years?
5 years.
5 years. So you don't have to, you know, be a 25-year veteran of the club. You know, if you're into the fishing or you just want to learn about fishing, what I do like about this club is you've got some members that come and it's kind of a social experience and they just enjoy the other members. And then you have other guys at all different levels of fishing, from people who throw a line out their backyard to guys who are going 130 miles out into the Gulf or, you know, spend their time against the mangroves. It's a very broad-based group.
Well, the thing about joining our club is that if you're here for 6 months or a year, you know, we can bring you up to speed on where to catch fish, how to catch fish. All you have to do is participate in the meetings and talk to the members afterwards, or go to the Tiki Hut on Wednesday night and talk to the guys that are there. And I personally make out a little package of all the different reefs and charts and a whole page of numbers from the club and offshore that I give to the newer members that are interested. And when they come over, I go over all this information with them, and it brings them up to speed where they can successfully go offshore. Now I'm speaking mainly offshore fishing, and go out there and be successful. They know where to catch the bait. They know where the hard bottom is. They know where some good grouper spots are. They know where to catch amberjack. And they get all this. They get all this in one package. And
what you looking for, this?
They have a good time fishing.
And maybe in the office. One of the things about that, we've talked a lot about the grouper because it is fish of the month. But you do have fish coming up during the year that you can catch in the harbor or maybe even in the canals.
Oh, absolutely.
It's not. This isn't just an offshore thing. You can go back and forth. You guys do a broad basis of fish. What was January's fish?
Sheep's head.
It is. It's still January.
It's still January. I was cleaning the RV out. I mean, and then lost track of time. So I got here in, you know, 10 minutes.
Yeah, we try and split the fish between inshore, nearshore, and offshore species so that, you know, inshore anglers, harbor anglers, offshore anglers have a pretty nice distribution of quarry to pursue. So, yeah. And the 23 species and the ones that go for Master Angler tournaments, Isles Trophy, there's a lot of things that you can find out about the club if you go to the club website, pgifishingclub.org, and, you know, learn the rules, show a little initiative, and we're glad to help you. But you got to make an effort.
Now, so Vinny, you look like you have something on your mind here. No, okay.
Right. Actually, what I do want to, before we wrap up, we do have a fishing seminar. We do them every year specifically to help new members come up to speed. And I kind of look at it as a jumpstart program where, you know, folks that have got, you know, like Jim, 13 years of experience fishing out here are able to share their knowledge and help new members get up to speed. So we're holding our next seminar. It's going to be March 26th. And so this is kind of out to all the new members, you know, get with Frank Barrett, who's the new events director, to get signed up for the seminar, because we got limited space. The sooner you sign up, the better.
Okay. So anything else we can talk about with grouper today?
They taste good.
Yeah.
They taste good. Yes.
One thing you might I'd like to mention is that when you do go out grouper fishing, a lot of times you're going to catch shark and other migratory species. And if you know you do that, you should have a migratory species permit. It's about $20 from NOAA, and that allows you to catch tuna and sharks and that kind of fish. And it's required if you're going to catch them and keep them. Even if you're going to catch them, you need it.
I'll be darned.
And one very important thing, because we're sticklers for rules, is that if you do go offshore and you catch a grouper, you need to take a picture of yourself holding the fish with the entire fish shown, so that, and obviously you're going to measure it, and then you submit that to the club, and that enters you into the Fish of the Month contest, plus all the other contests.
Okay. So, basically, PGI Fishing Club, and it's pgifishingclub.org. You do have to be a member of the Punta Gorda Isles Civic Association to be able to join the club. and but this is their fish of the month and grouper this month. Each month the fish changes, and it's a lot of it. Each month we're going to be coming in talking about how to catch a different species fish of the month. And for those of you who aren't in the club or live outside the area, hopefully you're going to get a little bit of good knowledge over all this. So each month we're going to be doing this with the PGI Fishing Club. Now, you can just go on their website to find out more about the club if you live in the area, or just keep listening to find out more about fishing. And let's I guess we'll wrap this up. Vinny, you want to
I guess just in closing on my part, you know, I'm looking forward to these broadcasts that we do every month to be able to get the word out to the club and help, you know, help them catch more fish. I know there's a lot of fishermen that live in PGI that are not members of the club. Hopefully they hear this broadcast and get interested.
Why would they live in PGI and not be a member of the club? It makes no sense.
They might not know we exist, so hopefully they're listening to this.
Well, it could be they're like me, and I'm not sure I'd want to be a member of any club that would let me in. You know? Groucho Marx, I can't help myself. So, Vinny, who are you with the club?
I'm the president of the club.
Okay.
I'm nobody.
Joe's nobody.
But I do have something else that I talk about all the time and emphasize all the time, is that if you're going to run 40, 50, 60 miles offshore, you need to have yourself an EPERT. EPERT is the satellite rescue system. 2 to 15 minutes, when that EPERT goes off, it goes to the satellite, and the rescue people know that there is a problem and they're on their way to save you from whatever stupid thing you did. So if you're going offshore that far, your radio generally, St. Petersburg will pick you up sometimes depending on the weather. Fort Myers won't pick you up at all. If the weather's nasty out there, there's not going to be another boat out there to hear you. If they're, you know, your best chance is one that's farther closer between you and the shore to pick it up and relay it, which sometimes happens, but an EPERT will save your life.
Yeah, if you have a 3-foot whip on your, you know, boat with your VHF, you're not talking to anybody unless they're nearby. Yeah. Jim is the guy who convinced me to get a PLB, a personal locator beacon, since I do go out and fish by myself in small boats, and it's worth the $250. He told me my life is worth more than that.
Even if you fish in the harbor, you know, some of our members are older than me, and
not too many.
They're feeble, and I can imagine, you know, getting off balance and falling overboard. If they had personal locator beacon, like Joe has, on their life jacket or on their belt or suspenders, and they fall overboard, they're going to be rescued.
Okay. So now,
yes,
you're the last one on the list here.
Well, I just, you know, I think we've covered a lot of stuff.
Well, kind of more, who are you and what are you with the club?
I was the former fishing events director for 2 years, and you know, still obviously actively involved, a little bit more time fishing now. But before I forget, I want to say thank you very much, Frank, for not only making this possible, this radio broadcast and the monthly broadcast to come, but also for supporting our club. You've been there every step of the way. Every time we've had a tournament, we do have 3 per year. You know, you've helped us out with door prizes, with raffle tickets, with a whole bunch of good stuff. So I just want to publicly say thank you again. We really appreciate it.
Yes, we do.
My pleasure. I mean, life should be a two-way street. So anyway, I am fishing Frank somewhat froggy today, but we're going to wrap up this session of radio fishing, or actually radio PGI.
Folks won't find us now because Mr. Satch and Mr. Cross, we gone fishing instead of just a wishing. Oh yeah.
All right, we'll see you on the next Radio Fishing. Bye-bye.